I don't know that it is common to the United States. We have a problem of venue. The guy happened to be in this small venue. And this venue, we are sharing with another committee we went for this. For the, I don't know if there's anything else I'd want to say.
Well, above that, the following week, my brother was involved in a car accident and died on the spot. And the same week, my uncle was hijacked. In fact, they waited for him at home when he arrived. He was just manhandled and put back into his car, drove away, and he was killed in the area of Rustenburg and thrown into the mine dump, and the car was traced at Komati Port, crossing over into Mozambique. We buried him on Sunday last week.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thanks, Papa. I just wanted to say I'm from the Northwest, but I'm here in the finance.
She ran away.
My apologies, because I'll run out at about 10 to 9 to, because we've got deliberations and health and social.
I'm supposed to be I hope Mema Tumela is a rapper rouser. You're not going to mess us up here. But I think now, welcome the tour. I'm having two presentations, ERLC and SAIC. And I understand we're starting with ERLC. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Vote of no confidence.
Honorable members of the Education Portfolio Committee, led by the chairperson, the Honorable Professor Mayatula, distinguished members of Parliament, let me take this opportunity to extend our condolences and sympathies with Honorable Member Boinam on the occurrences in his family. The mandate that is given to the ERLC is to ensure.
As for the start, I don't know, is it possible to allow the two presentations and then ask questions here? I'll help with that good. I'm worried about our time, and I want to allow these members of Parliament to start asking questions. They could take an hour. Just allow the two presentations, and then we'll come with our questions as we go. Yes.
The mandate of the ERLC derives from the Labor Relations Act as well as the Employment of Educators Act and allied education legislation. More than just promoting labor peace, in the ERLC we've reached a stage where transformation and development is a critical focus of the work of the ERLC. So its vision is not just labor peace, but more importantly, transformation and development. The mission of the ERLC is always one in which to be a leading provider, to be the best bargaining council in the country, and operating in the public education sector, focusing yet again on transformation and development. The budget we present was approved by our Minister and has since been overtaken by events and would need to be resubmitted in a revised form to the Minister after our presentation to the Portfolio Committee. We would then send up the updated version to the Portfolio Committee. We have a section called Additional Notes in which I will deal with where the budget would need to be revised. Assisting me in the presentation is our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Jeffrey Moshaga. And assisting us is our Media Officer, Heinz Voss, and he will be handling the laptop. The function of the ERLC is more than just to impartially facilitate the promotion of labor peace, as I indicated, with a specific emphasis on transformation and development. We have been a forum and continue to be the forum for the state of the employer and educators through the unions to bargain and consult and discuss and deliberate on matters of mutual interest and issues affecting the public education sector. The other core function is to prevent and resolve disputes, a function that we perform as the CCFA performs for others, for public educators. With the increase in the operation going to the demand based on the council, we can report at this stage that a levy increase was secured and took effect on the 1st of October 2007. A further new demand emanates from the implementation of the Further Education and Training Colleges Act of 2006, in terms of which the negotiation and dispute resolution costs of the council will increase, given that we would be addressing the needs of that sector within the council. Secondly, we bring into the council educators who were previously employed directly by the colleges themselves, and given that this sector is expected to more than treble in the next few years, we'll have more educators that we would have to cater for. The budget has been developed with the above in mind, and the activities have expanded to include the dispute resolution support services, that is, the provision of officials from trade unions to assist in dispute prevention, and 120 of them are deployed throughout the country. The training of these dispute resolution practitioners. With effect from August 2007, the programs have been expanded from 4 to 6. A summary of our program. The traditional services we provided were dispute resolution and support services. That's the CCMA function. The new services, number 2, dispute prevention support services, the deployment of 120 individuals to assist in labor peace. Negotiation support services. We've now distinguished between general public education and the further education and training sector, the colleges sector. The executive services have been functions that we have always performed, from management, intervention, and facilitation. Corporate services has been with us. Capital expenditure is there, but there's none significant that is envisaged for the forthcoming financial year. The way in which our business units have been organized in order to cater for the new demands on the council. Core function 1 is blue. The addition is dispute prevention support services that refers to the 120 full-time shop stewards that we have deployed. We have research and development and training and development now embedded into the normal functioning of the council and no longer supported by the transformation fund. If we look at our second core function, that's negotiation support services, we only used to cater for educators employed in terms of the Employment of Educators Act of 1998 as amended. We will now also cater for educators in the further education and training colleges sector, those who are employed in terms of the FETC Act of 2006. Our primary amendment, the way in which the governing body can make recommendations, okay, and the speed at which it must do so. Equally, then, it means the ELRC must change how it manages those cases. And that's where we developing a new firmness. That goes to our meetings on Saturdays that we have with our arbitrators. Secondly, we've been training the shop stewards. There was a question asked about the 37%. Now, those are the very people who must go and represent the union in these hearings. and we expect them to use the knowledge we give them from the CCMA training to be more expeditious and ensure that the teachers' grievances that are legitimate are only dealt with and not waste the counsel's or the department's time with grievances that have no basis. So, time frame is important, but it places the onus on the ELRC. So when you talk of displaced educators, likewise, the General Secretary's office must make sure they interact with the relevant provincial heads. This problem is endemic in KwaZulu-Natal and perhaps in the Eastern Cape. It's not so much a problem in other provinces. But displaced educators is a big issue and needs to be addressed equally with some speed. But in KwaZulu-Natal, the chamber itself have addressed measures regarding displaced educators. So there's a collective agreement in the province. And I know they're reviewing that to make it even a faster process. The problem is you cannot send the same person back to that community. If the community has seek the person out, we would have to go through a different exercise of community facilitation to see if they will accept that educator back. Invariably, a displaced educator must be accommodated somewhere else, and a decision taken to fill the post in that institution. The question of the teacher unions and the PCTA. When the project started in phase one, which was outside the ELRC, four teacher unions interacted with the US government and secured the funding. So when we interacted with the, when I interacted with the US government, they said, let's start with those four. We've already met with the US government and the CDC from December. And hopefully in July, when we do visit the USA, we would then secure the funding. In principle, it's been agreed to. And so the other unions, professional educators union, the CTPA, would be accommodated. But it is the US government that decides the acceptability of the program that the trade union would put in. So if they're not satisfied with the program, they may not get the funding. So our job as ELRC is to help them define what your intervention program is going to be and how you'd want to conduct it and do a cost analysis. You will find different unions have different approaches. NATU in particular and SATU, I think, have the largest number of members affected by HIV/AIDS. And their programs are geared in a particular manner to discharge them. So they've been left out in the beginning, but they will be brought on. And be accommodated. I think when one looks at OSD, OSD is seeking to transform the way in which we manage how teachers deliver, how the system delivers. It is saying that in giving a dispensation of paying teachers appropriately, it wants teachers to perform better. In order for teachers to perform better, I think it's commonly accepted parents perceive qualifications as being important. Governing bodies rightfully look at qualification as one of the bases upon which an educator can perform. When we talk of promotion posts, we certainly need to get people with better qualifications. If people want to manage schools, they must have a specialist management qualification that distinguishes them from being just a good teacher in a classroom. Now, qualifications, therefore, is an important area, and the unions have agreed with the department that there needs to be a qualification threshold. Where we set the qualification threshold is for the senior learning and teaching specialist, who's going to be a teacher in the classroom. But if they attain and can show, one, they have a qualification, and two, they are delivering good results, then it's not a promotion post, but it's an equivalent. They will be rewarded by becoming a teaching and learning specialist, which is a HOD's level. And if they go beyond that, then they can become master senior, which was all master teacher. And we're hoping that that keeps good teachers in the classroom and does not lose them. So you've got to draw a balance. In the old days, yes, you're right, Honorable Member, the perception was the teachers were studying instead of teaching. Our job is to now ensure that their studying is done after hours, If we talk of any training and development program, it must not be during school hours. It should be after hours. It should be weekend. Okay? Business schools run on that basis. Okay? It's in the evening, it's over weekend. Why? Because they know business people can't just leave the work. So how we ourselves monitor this, we must do so in a way in which we do not allow first teachers to go back and start teaching at the expense of the pupils. That's where I think the next notion of quality that comes in, the annual performance agreements for principals. The question was said, a principal has 0% results, okay, in that school. Through an annual performance agreement, the principal now has to answer. Up until now, you just got appointed as a principal. Whether you performed or didn't perform, there was little accountability. So OSD is bringing back accountability into the profession through the annual performance agreement. That means the principal must sit and justify why the school got 0%, why no improvement was made. The circuit inspector in charge of that school must also answer the same question, because he too has taken that school within his area of responsibility. So the transformation aspect, that these have all been agreed to. It's been agreed that there must be an annual performance agreement, that the only thing to agree on is how to frame it. It's also agreed to be standardized, okay? And that within that standardized framework, like we currently use for senior managers in the public service, we'll be able to monitor. Now, that will be a significant change, where a principal up until now was not held to account for why there is 0%. The whole idea is to show improvement in the results, whether that improvement is 1%. It's not there to reward the schools with the 85%. It's to show that even a school that got 85, is that school improving? Okay? So the whole idea is to turn it around. And I think that's the milestone of the OSD agreement in public education. Was not just about the general salary increase. It's redefining how we organize the school. And therefore, when one looks at continuous professional development, there has to be a great integration with that and career pathing. Okay? But there's a notion that there is formal qualification, that M plus 4 is going to be the standard, that to go higher in the system, like if you were a nurse, where you have to study and get higher qualifications to move in rank, you need a similar system. That's what our research to Mexico, Jamaica, Cuba, and other countries has shown us, that you cannot leave out qualifications in terms of how we manage the public education system. We made that mistake in 1996, where we took out qualifications. We made a mistake in 1996, where we took out salary progression. And now we find we're going to have to reintroduce that, to reinvigorate the public education school system. It is not acceptable that that school gets 0%. It's not acceptable that pupils are not having teachers improving their performance. Even if they fail, if a child improves from 20% to 30%, that is an improvement that the system must begin to recognize. And I think that is what OSD is doing. That hasn't come out, unfortunately, in the newspapers. It hasn't come out. But the unions have made tremendous compromises and accept, in good faith, that a teacher's right cannot surpass the right of a child to learn. Teachers must be in schools. Teachers must be teaching. And OSD comes in that context. Okay? So when one looks at what FAPE is doing in terms of the managing the implementation of the professional continuous development program, one has to integrate it now with the OSD, where it's going, and how that's going to fit in. Fortunately, FACE is managing it on behalf of the department. That must also then fit in on how we're going to train teachers, because we really have a problem in our country. Our HSRC report showed us that unless we come up, be creative, we will not produce the number of teachers we need. We may be getting Zimbabweans coming now, but if their country gets better, they may want to go back. Okay? And then we need to produce teachers in our country. So the whole issue of teacher training therefore becomes very important. That's why it's part of the OSD agreement. PCD, the continuous professional development of teachers, is part of the OSD agreement. The training and development of teachers is part of the OSD agreement. So we look at a totality of issues when OSD addresses.
Yeah, we are ready to cross over. We are about to knock at that door now.
Okay.
We are so passionate about it. Can we agree to cross over today?
Yeah.
Thank you. I will deal with some of the issues and then hand over. As far as registration is concerned, it applies to all teachers in public and independent schools, every single teacher and the FETC colleges, so that sector as well. Yes, we do have unqualified, underqualified teachers who are registered, but they don't get full registration. They get provisional registration, which has a date by which they are required to be fully registered. However, I do need to bring to the attention of the members that while we have a skill shortage, and we have a serious skill shortage in education, there are not enough teachers qualified in particular subjects, and schools are resorting to employing unqualified people. They have degrees, perhaps, in subjects, but they don't have the professional qualification, and state is registering those provisionally as well. Some of those people are quite old and are not intending to qualify as teachers. That is problematic, and we would prefer a fully qualified, professionally qualified person, a fully registered person, but while there is a skill shortage, it's not really possible to deny the school the opportunity of employing someone who can, in fact, do the teaching. It is a problem, but it's part of our country skill shortage issue. The deregistration matter, as soon as the council is made aware of an issue, any issue, an offence in terms of our code of conduct, SAFE can begin investigating. It can do that simultaneously with other processes. However, when it's the very serious cases, such as rape, the criminal charges, in fact, are brought. It's very easy for SAFE then to deal with it once there's a finding like that. We do have a problem when we are not informed, if the education departments do not bring it to our attention, if they have disciplined educators, they are supposed to forward it to SAFE so that SAFE can also have its process. But as soon as we have been through the SAFE's disciplinary process, that the person has been subjected to due process, found guilty, that person is deregistered. We try to do it as fast as possible. Then when it comes to this naming and shaming, we're not really very keen on that particular label, naming and shaming, because there are problems attached to it. However, we do want the names of people who are no longer registered to be available to employers. That is very important. Those names must be available. At the June Council meeting, the exact internal administration mechanism for making these known will be finalized. However, there is a decision to make it public. So that's where we are at present. Then when it comes to performance and the broader understanding of the code of ethics, yes, it does require a teacher to deliver performance, not only to be a decent person and to refrain from various offenses, it also requires performance as a professional at a high standard. The performance standards are in the process of being looked at, but because of the nature of our work and this is perhaps the age of the council, we have focused on the conduct in terms of offences rather than in terms of incapacity and inability to do the job or deliver the job properly. That would be our next phase. It is, of course, part of the education department's work, because teachers are employed in terms of the Educators Employment Act, and it's for the employer to charge teachers with incapacity and the inability to perform. So we would rely on the department to do that. They, I must say, in fact, do not pursue that very vigorously either. In our province, I cannot recall one successful case of that nature being brought yet. Our CPD points are most definitely linked to improved learner performance. We have identified that as one of the primary purposes of this whole system. must be linked to learner performance. You need to engage in some professional development activity that is linked to the needs of your school. It has to be linked with your school improvement plan. The school improvement plan submitted to the district, submitted to the province, would draw up the needs of each educator and each school. And what a teacher should engage in needs to be linked to that. They will have an opportunity to do some free choice activities, but they do have to link it with the school plan. If reading, for instance, low literacy levels is a problem in that school, and that school says it's a problem, the teachers will then have to do professional development in order to improve their ability to teach reading to learners, for instance. So I think we have understood that now, and it will be linked to career pathing. At present, the point system is not going to be punitive. In other words, if you don't accumulate your points, we're not going to punish you. We're not in a position in the country to punish teachers because we're just so short of teachers. But we will link it with a kind of incentive, and an employer would look at the person and say, are your points up to date? If you are fully up to date with your points, then you would be more employable in a senior position because it's shown your commitment to professional development and you have been engaged in lifelong learning and improvement, which would benefit the school. So in an indirect manner, it is linked to career pathing. The better standing you are in with your points, the more likely you will get the promotion. And certainly there are the formal requirements which the ELRC has articulated for those higher positions in schools where you have to acquire certain qualifications. We've also stressed the fact that this should not be at the expense of learners. It has to be out of school time. It must be possible to accumulate your points within the 80 hours that have been provided for in resolution applicable to teachers, 80 hours per annum, which is 2 hours per week if you do it that way, or you do it in your school holidays or weekends, not in school time. I think I would stop with those. The other issues can be dealt with, perhaps the conflict with the union.
Basil, you want to make a point?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to respond to the Honourable Member from the EFF. He mentioned the tensions between unionism and professionalism, and yes, indeed, they are still there. However, the ELRC General Secretary has referred to the OSDs, and I think through the OSDs, a lot of ground has been covered. I think the unions have in the words of the General Secretary, have compromised to a large extent on those issues around those tensions and resolved many of those issues. However, to come to SACE's role in terms of the professional development and professional behavior of teachers, I think it is important for us to note that the Employment of Educators Act has provisions to deal with misconduct, serious misconduct. And therefore, there are pieces of legislation that will look after and deal with principals who are not performing, principals who are weak, leaders who are not producing the goods in schools. There are provisions that deal with that directly. Teachers who are perhaps in the classroom studying while they are supposed to be teaching, there are provisions to deal with those people, very clear provisions. And if the powers that be in the education system itself, before we get to say, deal with these things appropriately and adequately, then that needs to happen. SACE has an opportunity, though, to discover or to investigate these conditions at school. And when those arise are when SACE is invited by either a complaint from a school or a teacher about a colleague or about some other person who might have transgressed the code of conduct of SACE, then SACE goes to those schools, investigates that particular matter, but has an opportunity to do a kind of whole school evaluation at the same time because you have the opportunity to interact with the authorities at the school, the principal, the deputy principal, heads of department, all the teachers, even the learners. And through that exercise, I think all aspects of the school, the management, the discipline, the policies of the school, all of those things can form the basis of a report by FACE. And through that kind of exercise, have often discovered dysfunctionality in schools.
I'm worried about my time. It's almost 12 o'clock now.
Yeah.
If it goes too much, then it's I can. Yes, I want to start a spot. Yes.
Not yet.
I think we've got
11.
I'm sorry. Let's do 1 hour more. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, just a quick point, 2 points from my side, is just to emphasize this topic of naming and shaming. The council's intention has not been so far to disgrace teachers any further, because once it takes a decision and they are struck off the roll, council feels that it has taken an appropriate sanction, and the council is of the view that we should be as corrective as possible. But we have declared to the media, and we declared to this august body today, that we will make names available for the purposes of protecting the profession and protecting the learners. These will be available on the website. The other point I want to make is just to latch on to what Basil was saying. Professionalism, we must understand, is a two-way street. And the council will not hesitate, even if it is the prime duty of the employer to make sure that teachers are doing their work, council will not hesitate to intervene when it gets a complaint. Because sometimes you find there is tardiness from the side of employers for one reason or another. These matters need to be brought to council so that council can, one, alert the employer, and secondly, take its own action, because it does fall within the code of ethics. So we want to make it clear and unambiguous that council will not hesitate to call any teacher to order in this country, or a school principal, or a district official. But it can only do so on the basis of it getting a complaint and having some evidence. So we invite our leaders to take us up on that offer. And there is no worry on our part that we are compromising the professionalism of teachers, because we have long agreed that teachers are both workers and professionals. Now, as professionals, they need to display a certain obligation to the profession. And we feel that there are good signs that they are doing so in the large majority of cases. But having said that, Chair, we must understand that this is a two-way street. And we as employers of teachers as well need to be introspective about some of the conditions that our educators work under. It is very difficult to demand professionalism out of an educator that works in a school situation that is deprived, where you would find that there are no facilities, there are no resources, there are traveling difficulties. There are socio-economic problems there. So one is saying that, yes, while we will demand professionalism of educators and we will deal with educators unflinchingly in terms of the code of ethics, but we ourselves need to be fully supportive of requests that come from schools from time to time for teachers and schools and school management teams needing support. And these are missing from the side of the district. So I just thought we'd put that perspective. Thank you, Chair. Morris, do you want to just say quickly about the...
No, the 13 million administrative expenses is inclusive of 1.7 million of structural meetings, 8.3 for salaries, which takes into account the process which is ongoing now for job evaluation and reorganizing the organization. And the remaining 3 million is for office administration, like the photocopies, telephones, consultations.
We're going to have a second round.
No, I just missed
off.
The question was about disclosure. Now, the problem in our country is that you, for a variety of reasons, even related to cultural issues, is to disclose one's status of HIV/AIDS is a difficult one because there is the issue of stigmatization. Last week, the lady who publicly declared at our launch of the PCTA program on the 15th of April was in fact being targeted in her own school. So we are due to visit that school fairly soon. But the way the unions are managing this, prevention is an issue to run through advocacy, and that's public. But the care and treatment access is a very private one to encourage educators who do have it to seek the treatment. One of the challenges we face when working with people with HIV/AIDS is persuading them to seek treatment. And that is managed by the unions with its members on a very private and confidential basis. Otherwise, publicly, because of the stigmatization, people won't want to declare it. So that's how the unions are approaching it. The success of our program will be too soon to measure now, but we would have to have some indicators over time to see what impact we're making in the teaching profession and whether we can, in fact, bring it down from 16%. We are a growing profession. If it still remains 16%, it means it's continuing to spread because educators, some of them, are dying. Okay? And if we still maintain 16%, it means others are getting infected. So the idea is to try and change that. And I think perhaps in 2-3 years' time, we could seek the necessary resources as we engage with our funders on how to conduct a research to study the impact of what we are doing, which will be part of the work that we are trying to do. So I think that should cover that. Our conference, in terms of looking at issues, There's quite a bit of research the department has done to KPMG, to the Pandey Pillay report on the FETC sector. But when we are conducting our investigative trips, especially we do have two plans for this year overseas to look at specific issues, we can factor in the FETC issue, and so that it's an area we can then begin to report on. We have sent you copies of our previous research report, and then we will most certainly send you these
reports
that are available.
Thank you, sir. Again, we appreciate what FETC is doing. But the statement that you'll wait until there's a complaint, it's a bit of a worry that you won't act until there's a complaint when something unprofessional happens out there. Some people out there may not be aware of what the provisions of faith are. Government bodies, for instance. I'm not too sure how aware they are of the first existence of faith itself out in the rural areas where a lot of unprofessional behavior takes place. That's one. Now, faith is concerned about deals with educators. But what happens if the department itself does something which is unprofessional? I'm referring to here, for instance, appointment of educators sometimes is not done professionally. And I think SAIS has to be more vocal there. For instance, I'm not too sure whether party politics, which is bedeviling our education system, will come within the mandate of faith to be vocal. I'm not talking about politics as such, but I'm talking about party politics in schools, which sometimes become very unprofessional, where teachers will spend more time mingling or dealing with party politics in classrooms instead of teaching. I think faith must be seen to be more vocal against such and professional behavior amongst our group. And also, lastly, you look at these appointments, political appointments, in fact, where a principal who has been, I don't want to use the term useless, because I don't want to refer to use the term useless as far as a human being is concerned. But let me use it for lack of another term. Useless principal, but because he is politically connected, promoted to a position of inspector, and also he becomes useless and unprofessional. And since, because the wait for complaints, I may be wrong, but I would like to see you being more vocal in those areas. But he is saying, I must use the term, proactive.
Thank you, to say the issue of registration of foreign educators. I'm not raising it because you have mentioned that the majority are from Zimbabwe, but I just want to address the issue of foreign teachers in general. I'm sure we do go through the process of evaluating their qualifications in order to ensure that they've got appropriate and acceptable qualifications. But is there a way of ensuring that, you know, before they go to a classroom, they are able to communicate with South African students? Because that's the observation that I have made. A lot of students have complained that we do have this so-called very good foreign teacher, but we cannot hear what they are saying. So if there's no communication, teaching or education cannot take place. Secondly, to say, I'm really disturbed about the fact that, you know, you keep on mentioning the fact that you don't have, you know, enough teeth. You do have some teeth, but you're not enough. And I'm sure we need to complement those teeth as this portfolio community to ensure that you are effective in what you're doing. But over and above what we are doing as members of parliament, you know, during our constituency period, we talk to teachers, we visit schools, and we encourage them to register. We show them the importance of registering with space. But is there anything over and above that we, as this portfolio community, can do, especially with your two major challenges, that of registration and that of funding, to ensure that you become effective? And then a comment, finally, Chairperson. We are glad about what the initiative that is being taken by ELRC in the issue of giving support to teachers who are affected and infected. But like you have rightfully said from state side, that, you know, it is not only HIV and AIDS that affect the effectiveness of teachers. There are so many other socio-economic problems that we have inherited from where we come from. And I would really love to see proactivity from your side in giving support to teachers. I know a lot of teachers have got serious financial problems that make it difficult for them to concentrate on what they are supposed to do. Like I said, socio-economic problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. In the past, if a teacher develops his own qualification or her own qualification, let's say perhaps a teacher obtains a master's degree, there was no financial motivation in terms of upping the salary scale of this teacher. And the teacher would get 3,000 rand once off. Now, I want to know if this is still the case, because I see it as something that does not actually help in motivating teachers to improve their qualifications. I know that one does not only improve one's qualifications only for the purpose of personal purposes, but to become resourceful in the classroom, but personal gains are also part of it. Secondly, I think we all agree, all of us in education, that grade R is where a good foundation
should actually be made in terms of establishing, you know, a culture of learning at that level. But I know of a teacher who has actually acquired a diploma in the great R. Teaching, but this teacher finds it difficult to get employment. How can this teacher be assisted? Thank you.
Chairperson, is it says now? In terms of registration, I'm not sure whether I captured it correctly that you say there are teachers who are not yet registered, and yet they must register. In terms of registration, you know, it is stipulated that all teachers need to register. They need to register with the South African website. Is it not perhaps the fact that they are not actually compelled? Why can't we say they must register? But you say they need to register. Well, you know, why don't you really compel them? Use a stronger word to say all teachers must register with SAIL. Then perhaps in that sense, you know, you will have more of them coming on board. It's just a thought. And just another one now. The registration of foreign teachers, I think it is said 100 of them register every month. I'm sorry? Per day. Every day. They register with SAIL. I just wanted to verify that. And most of them, or all of them, come from Zimbabwe. Most of them. It's very, very interesting. Does that translate into something like poaching from that distressed country? Well, we need them as well. No, it's fine. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. With me, I'm also worried about the process for peace to get what is happening down there. Because really things are happening. We do come across some cases where you find that a wife of a traditional leader is a teacher. And then under that school, the principal is under can you please talk to Mponjani about this teacher in the city
class? Oh.
I'm sorry. You know, that principal is under that traditional leader. And then he's unable to call this mother teacher to order, because in the first place she's the chief's wife, and then she abuses her power, you know, knowing that she cannot be reported by the teacher, and the poor school governing bodies, they are also fearful of maybe taking actions or reporting this this lady to the higher authority. And then the lady really, she's abusing her power. And then I was checking on this one, where you are going to, where teachers are going to be credited for what they are doing in the community. Sometimes in that case, it's going to be, that is going to be done at the expense of the learner. So that's why I'm saying really the process to take that matter up to face, just to say that really some people are abusing their powers, and then where I know that matter will be difficult for to get that information from the poor school governing bodies, and then even the principal, because he's also controlled by that chief. So my concern is that to get that information to save really our kids down there are getting it very tough. And then one other thing is my concern is on the levies, both sides, that 5 rand and 10 rand. And today petrol is up. Are you really going to review this in future? Thank you, Chair.
Bundle. That's one bite, you know. Clearly, you know, I think the officials, you know, responsible for SAFE, they do see the need for better visibility of SAFE on the ground. So in that context, you know, how far are you with at least establishing provincial offices to maximize that awareness? And also your newsletter, you know, when are you going to start? Because that's another way, you know, of getting people aware of state governing bodies and so on, so that you know, you can pick up cases in Timothy. Because there are a lot of bad things happening there on the ground. I'm not going to tell tales here. I've had so many tales being told here. Thank you.
Maybe on the traditional leader, why don't we assist them? We are the members of parliament. We see there's this teacher who is abusing, not doing. We use our own powers, knowing that it has to be what, and report on that.
Chairperson, you know, that lady, she says no one, you know, she acts as if she's above the law.
We do know that. There's nobody, even the president, is above the law. It is us must use our power to report that.
I will invite you.
Maybe my comment is on OSD. This is based on performance. I want to use the Western Cape, for example, as one typical example. In our education and performance, there is a deep divide between the X Model C and other schools. And the reason for that, it has to do with resources. We use the formula, this post-provisioning by the department, and say this school qualifies for 11 teachers. We go to Rustenburg, where I took my kid. We say you qualify for 11 teachers. I go there, I agree to pay 16,000 rand a year. And they employ 15 more teachers. And that school has 15 plus 11. This one has only 11. And you are going to assess their performance. How do we factor that in so that we don't have... Let me take another to say it now. I don't know whether it is the department or who is failing. It's what Mr. was referring to.
we have this HIV AIDS, which is killing our teachers. In my province, they are burying these teachers almost every week. Because they are burying them over every week, there are two funerals. First one is the memorial. The memorial service happens during the week. It will start at 11, and the whole district closes at 10 in order for them to gather there. Where does that fit in all these things that we're talking about? This is a way of like, no, it's not the teachers. I'm not blaming the teachers now. Because in that memorial service, the head of the department, the district official, the one they do, is going to be opening and talking about this. And on our side, we sit here and say 196 days.
Chair, I think Faith will go first.
Okay.
When the chair calls us to order for time, we'll hand over to you.
Right, thank you. I would like just to go to the complaint. Perhaps I didn't speak properly. If we get a complaint, we act. We don't only wait. If we see any a newspaper item that relates to a teacher, we can pursue it. If we hear a whisper, we can pursue it. If anonymous call comes through, we can pursue it. If we go to investigate a school on another matter, as we've heard from Basil, and we pick up something, we can go further with it. So, no, we don't wait, but it has to come to our attention somehow, whether it's our own ears or whether it is reported to us. So we will act when something occurs. Issue of the fear is a problem for us, because we can investigate, but when we get to a place, somebody eventually has to give evidence, because we can't find a person guilty of anything unless somebody is prepared to say what the offence was in terms of our code and witness to it, because otherwise it's not a due process. So we do act, and we will act as fast as we possibly can if we get any kind of whispering about something that is a contravention of the code. The credit for community activities, I think I need to be a little clearer there as well. It's community activities that contribute to the school. So if you have a situation of an undernourished community, if they establish a food garden for that school on that school property where those learners benefit from that, it's directly for the benefit of those learners. It's not something of a broader nature. It's not serving as some representative on some community body. It must have a direct impact on the school. So it must affect the learners themselves. You ask what Parliament can do and our teeth, and this responds to the registration issue as well. The law says that every teacher must register. The law says that, but as you know, if there's no penalty attached, there's nothing we can do. We can only charge people who are registered. So if they are registered and they do something wrong, SAFE can act. If they haven't registered, SAFE has no jurisdiction over them, although they should have registered. But there's no penalty provided for in our legislation. We have no regulations allowing us to do anything. So that's what we need. That is a legislative change that we are going to have to request, as well as an employer, whether it's a governing body or a council of a college or whether it is the education department. We have nothing to act against those employers. So, in fact, that's a legislative thing. I also think the conditions of schools are bad in many cases and are hindering performance. What we would require from broader society and from our government is the social programs, the social support that is necessary. We have the child-headed households. We have children coming to school without food in their stomachs. Those things we need our other social services to support education. So I think we really need to go on there. And the funding, we are going to approach the minister sometime in the middle of the year and request a new dispensation with regard to funding. So your assistance and your support when that is before you, we would value.
Just a few points from my side. There's a nice question about teachers engaging in party politics. and this takes us back to some of our own days as activists. Now, we preach the same thing that we practice, is that teachers do not use their professional time, their time in school, for anything that is related to their personal gain. Whether it's party politics, whether it is making additional money, or whatever it is, you do not use your professional status for your personal interest, which includes promoting your own political party or your own brand of religion. But that doesn't mean to say that teachers will not be able to promote human rights, you know, constitutional values. So we must make that difference. We would, in fact, encourage them to do that. And, of course, that doesn't mean to say that we have any kind of restriction on teachers' activities out of the professional domain. They have citizens' rights like any other citizen. The other point we want to make is this question of fear and safety. It's a sensitive matter, and I think this is where people need to bring that to our attention and to declare the sensitivity or the safety issues around it. And faith will make a presence felt over there. Sometimes we feel, just by going to a school, we send out a huge team there. Although we don't gather enough evidence to prosecute and to lay a charge, but the message spreads that be careful, faith is watching you and they've come here. So you find that in many places there is a lot of worry once faith pitches up there. So we have that kind of remedying effect. But of course, if we gather evidence, we will charge those people. The other question about appointments not being done fairly, I think it's a question even with the ELRC we'll have to apply our minds to. It's a big topic, this one. Very often we get this complaint, and we really don't know how to deal with it there. We've got to find a plan how to deal with governing bodies that appoint their own connections, you know, over and above others. And then also us as a nation, we have this son of a soil approach in our hearts, which we need to also reckon with. You know, we ourselves want to promote people from our own community. So we have to balance and find out where there is something good and where there is something not acceptable. But we do get a fair number of complaints. And quite honestly, I think it is a topic that collectively we need to deal with. This is a very interesting question about the evaluation of foreign educators. And, Chair, I think it is a matter we have to deal with because, you know, we are raising the standards in faith. Now we have, besides getting the qualifications evaluated, either by the department or by SAQWA, we went one step further. We asked for a letter of professional standing. In other words, we want some kind of a testimonial from your country to be saying that you are an okay person to teach. I mean, it's not foolproof, but at least it raises the standards a bit. But other countries, for example, England, will have the kind of entry screening tests that you would have to undergo, and we have not gone there yet. But I think this now puts that question to council: is why shouldn't we go there? I mean, a simple literacy test, for example, it wouldn't be rocket science for the council. So thank you for that suggestion and the other suggestions that are coming. But just to plead again with the portfolio committee to really, when you have the opportunity, to emphasize to employers, the departments of education, to make sure that, and we will raise this with the DG as well, that those schools, that all schools in their provinces, have educators that are registered with SAFE. It is come to our knowledge that many of the school governing bodies, sir, have this kind of backdoor appointments, and that doesn't come to our information. And the department also seems to close its eyes to school governing body appointees because it feels like it is not really their business. So I think there is some pressure that we need to put on ourselves, you know, to make sure that the departments are more vigilant in terms of the governing body employees and their registration and in terms of the public school. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if you want to add any other point. You okay? Daya?
I think there was a question on improvement of qualifications and the qualifications for grade arts. The problem we have is we don't have an organized system in which teachers' qualifications are being dealt with. The training of teachers in grade R, it's going to be the next area of expansion. The budget, I'm sure, that's going to be coming from Parliament is going to increase funding in future on grade R and early childhood development. But we do not have an organized way in which those educators are trained. And secondly, the provisioning of ECD is very limited and is handled very differently in provinces. So those qualifications, one has to be looked at, the way in which they're trained has to be looked at, and the placement of qualified educators into the system is something that must apply and must be enforced. And that's why I think the minimum requirement is important. It certainly we can force the state as an employer, because, I mean, they can set the example. The whole idea of improvement in qualifications, yes, a few years ago, as a short-term as one of the measures to recognize qualification, they gave one-off bonuses, because you want teachers to study. Now, with our drive now for bringing back qualification into the system and making it a requirement, maybe that will be reviewed, maybe it won't. But the review of other collective agreements will take place in the next few months. But the idea is to see how best we can promote qualification. I think the concerns you raise are issues I would have to raise with my parties. And that is, how do we put in place measures to prevent teachers from teaching, from studying in teaching time? Okay? And how do we deal with those issues? The question of levy increases. I think we've both faced in the year last year just got a levy increase. I think I cannot foresee, even with an expansion of our program, immediately going back and taking more money from teachers. I think we're going to have to justify that. That's what the PFMA is about. If you want to take more money, you take it not to accumulate wealth, not to have a reserve fund, it's to discharge responsibilities. On our current thinking, we think we can manage safely till about 2030, okay, with the efficiency, etc. But we didn't take into account the circumstance that exists now economically. If that prevails, that has a significant impact, then we'll have to look at other measures of maybe increasing the levy at perhaps half the rate of increases the teachers get. You see, we can't accumulate wealth and not have programs designed to expend it. If you look at the way in which we've given you, our salary bill is not significant. It's our programs that consume most, and our program must justify that. So I'm not going to be recommending any increase without a clear idea of a program that justifies that increase. In respect of OSD, Prof, I think you're right. The problem is with our post-provisioning model, the way in which we distribute posts. We first had a model. We gave equally to all schools based on the number of pupils. Then we did a tinkering. We took the quintiles of schools, and then we decided to see how we can advance each school. The problem is, it's giving a fraction of a teacher. Okay? So even if we gave that poor school 12 teachers and gave the other school 11 based on the same number of pupils, is not helping. So the research we've conducted 3 years ago with the Center for Education Policy Development Unit, the CEPD, together with Paul Musker and Associates, has found that we perhaps should look at a new way of distributing money. Because if you take it, 11 teachers in a school in a rural area and 11 teachers in a school in the Model C school you visit from cost differently, because the teacher that the Model C school has employed is very highly qualified, so he's therefore getting paid more. Okay? If you take the teacher that's employed in the rural school, we can safely say half of them will be unqualified, and therefore will be temporarily earning less. So the money we're spending, that's what the research shows, is not equitable. So we need a bold new way of distributing money to the advantages of poor schools. Because in the rural communities, they don't have the governing body, even if it wants to charge 15,000 rand, will not get 15,000 rand. Therefore, its ability to employ more teachers will be limited. So we need to to have some bold approaches to how we provide. Equal provisioning is no longer the norm. We're going to have to take into account not just the poverty, which is what we're doing through the quintile ranking, but look at the other factor. Is that school community, is it wealthy? Why should, can we not then shift some of the resources in the form of teachers? So it does require some very bold thinking in that respect. Otherwise, we're not going to address the distribution of educators, because we need to get qualified teachers into those communities. That's the significant disadvantage we perpetuate as long as we don't send qualified teachers to those communities. Because we can pay teachers more, and if they're only going to benefit in the urban and peri-urban areas, what about the rural areas where we need to get, and it's, to that extent perhaps you've applied your mind as Parliament and said the head can appoint, you know, qualified teachers. We have to look at a bursary system. Like when I became a teacher, I knew from day one through history, I'm going to start teaching somewhere in Transvaal. It took me a few years before I went to Durban. They call it the fishing reef, you know, the fish, and they bring you in slowly. Today, we do not have that ability to deploy teachers. And so if we are in control of the training of teachers and providing of bursary, it's not called community service as the debate is in, among doctors. We accepted it as part of the contract of accepting a bursary. So it's those issues that's going to have to be looked at in order to change how we provide qualified teachers. Because OSD alone is not going to do it. It requires other forms of proving. That's why we say that we need, as the ELRC, to look at this issue of teacher provision, teacher training and development, and see how best we can link it up and address those kinds of issues. So I think to that extent are the kinds of challenges we face. And the ELRC itself can't do anything. It requires some parliamentary processes, and hopefully there can be some adjustments made when we're looking at the amendments to the employment of education laws fairly soon. If one takes the issue of the educators who are being charged, etc., we need to begin to empower the employers to enforce the safe code of conduct and make it mandatory when they're having disciplinary hearings that they enforce the safe code of conduct. Somehow in the Employment of Educators Act, it needs to be made mandatory together with sections 17 and 18, forms of misconduct. And those issues need to be dealt with. So it requires those kinds of interventions. Thank you.
Let me abuse. I'm trying to clarify my question. My question was more concerned with OED as we speak. I'm saying we are rolling out OECD now. It is performance based. I'm saying the teacher at the Litra, Choir Litra, and the teacher in a public school at Rustenburg currently, are they not going to be disadvantaged as far as that performance? Not because they did anything, but because they have 11 teachers compared to the same public school which has 35 teachers. That's what I was trying to find out now as we speak. What are the implications of that?
I apologize. The issue of the contextual factors is taken into account and must be further clarified in our refinements of the OSD. When we talk of the improvement of performance, we know we have two different sets of schools. Therefore, we measure improvement, we measure the improvement of the performance, and not just the performance output. The school that is advantageous can perform at 85, whereas the school that is disadvantaged, let's assume, is performing at 45%. As long as we're improving that, that's the first area. The second is we must take into account that the individuals are not prejudiced in terms of pupil performance by taking contextual factors. And when we go to the OSD agreement, we've agreed on the principle. Now we have to look at how we build in contextual factors so that teachers teaching in disadvantaged communities don't suffer a further prejudice.
Chair, just a quick point from our side. One is you've raised a very, very tricky question about our schools and our districts closing down, and everybody is going to some memorial or other event. There has always been an old principle in the teaching profession that we need to revive, is the question of making up for lost time. You see, there is this dilemma, it's an ethical dilemma, of respecting the traditions of a community, which we want to sort of uphold. But at the same time, I think we need to demand from our teachers to make sure that learners' lost time is made up for, so that this will in some way keep a check on this. Otherwise, people would just take advantage if they know that you could close school and go away and not make up for that time. It would be very difficult, I think, in the light of our strong tradition, to sort of put a stop to that sort of community practice. But I think we must guard against abuse of it. Morris, I think you wanted to say something quickly about the provincial offices and newsletter.
Yes, it's on the current year's agenda that we should start contact points. Due to the lack of resources, we are having some agreements with ALRC that utilize their facilities in the provincial offices and to make sure that we get closer to our teachers. In terms of the newsletter, this year we'll have one newsletter somewhere around July, August. It will go out. And we'll also have a huge publication on World Teachers Day just before it takes place in October. So we are trying our best to claim back our image.
Just a short one. Does this have a dress code for educators? Why I'm asking this question, about 2 months ago, one of the students from Meshes, I think, called us. Went public and said female teachers in schools were distracting their focus and attention. But they made a why statements in newspapers about miniskirts and other things, you know.
Yeah. Can I respond to that, Chair? In fact, a few months ago, the DG wrote us a letter to that effect. To check with us if there was specific entries in our code of ethics regarding the dress of teachers. Council had a very long deliberation on it, and council ruled that teachers, without wanting to prescribe what teachers should wear, council ruled that where there are allegations of inappropriate dress, they should be directed to council. And council would be able to investigate and charge those educators on a number of entries in our code. For example, there is one that says that you would conduct yourself in a manner that is respectful of the community that you serve. So although we don't have a specific entry prescribing what teachers should wear, but there is sufficient safeguard. So we want to encourage people wherever there is an allegation that someone is improperly dressed, be it a male or a female teacher, because we also hear that sometimes the male teachers go in short pants and sandals and they are teaching, you know, indoor subjects. Thanks.
Also, thanks. You covered my follow-up. I just wanted to say, if there's a dress code for women, there has to be for men, because they also can expose things that you don't want.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think my personal view is that we must be reasonably prescriptive about what we mean by appropriately attired. And I think as long as nobody wants to define what is appropriately attired, enforcement of a code of conduct and what is the appropriate way of dressing will be hard to enforce.
I agree fully with you.
Okay. And so it does require, because it can be, you see, later on it will become a misconduct or an unprofessional conduct. And if it is a misconduct or unprofessional conduct, it does require some definition.
Yes.
Because appropriate dressing for a PE teacher is not a suit and a tie, because then he's not teaching. Okay? But a teacher in a classroom,
I mean, we in the ELRC, we have a staff code of code of dress. We know everybody must, male must wear a tie and a coat, okay? Females must come appropriately attired. We have a number of discussions to clarify it. We cannot be too general in the teaching profession and then think we can enforce it. It becomes impossible to enforce what you define as merely appropriate.
Yeah.
We'll
ask
the text of paper. I want to close this now before we sit down. Someone.
Thank you, Chairperson. With me, really. That's why I'm not I look so serious, because this matter is not that simple. Because there are fashions outside there, and we should check on our restrictions. Mine was on this memorial service things. We are saying, please, that memorial service, it can be after school hours. Not to say we cancel that, but we say it should be after hours. Because some teachers, they go there at about, kids leave school at about 9, 10 o'clock. While that memorial service can be held at about 3 or 3:30, you see, not to take the whole day to say that it's a memorial service. Thank you, Chair.
I think we have exhausted our questions. And just wanted to make just a few announcements. Thank you ever so much, really. I hope we're going to be invited in the World Teacher's Day. The last one I attended was in Bloemfontein 20 years ago. I'm told there is a lunch provided at the Max Basic. You are all invited. You don't have to have fingers. It's sitting down.
What time, bro?
It starts at 12:30. Sorry, it's ready now. What time now? It starts at 12:30. Yes. And the what is the other one? The VUT trip is still on. The Val University of Technology. That trip, remember, is on until 18th. On Monday, the 18th. That one is still on. They postpone the visits to the Eastern Cape and KZN. We'll find a slot later to put it in. And if you budget the date.